This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
AI has just hacked the operating system of human civilization. The operating system of every human culture in history has always been language. In the beginning was the word. We use language to create mythology and laws, to create gods and money, to create art and science, to create friendships and nations. What we are potentially talking about is nothing less than the end of human history. Now, not the end of history, just the end of the human-dominated part of what we call history. History is the interaction between biology and culture. It's the interaction between our biological needs and desires for things like food and sex, and our cultural creations like religions and laws. History is the process through which religions and laws interact with food and sex. Now, what will happen to the course of this interaction of history when AI takes over culture? Within a few years, AI could eat the whole of human culture, everything was produced for thousands and thousands of years, to eat all of it, digest it, and start gushing out a flood of new cultural creations, new cultural artifacts.
That was Israeli scholar Yuval Noah Harari speaking April 29th, 2023, in Switzerland for the Future of Life Institute.
Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks, such as pandemics and nuclear war.
In May 2023, that one-sentence warning came from over 350 tech leaders and researchers. The technology they were developing, they said, could enslave or wipe out humanity. Among the signatories, Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, Demis Hassabis, CEO of Google DeepMind, Dario Amodei, CEO of Anthropic, and Geoffrey Hinton, the so-called godfather of AI, who recently quit Google over fears about his own life's work. Some experts like the Egyptian Mo Gawdat and Geoffrey Hinton say the immediate threat of AI is much greater as a danger than climate change. We hear more about why in today's show. For clarity, I focus on one speaker, that Israeli public intellectual, professor, and historian Yuval Noah Harari. He is author of 10 books. Sparking these urgent warnings on March 22nd, a group of AI experts and researchers called for a pause to AI experiments until some kind of regulation made them safer. This was published by the Future of Life Institute. One of the signatories was Yuval Noah Harari. You're going to hear selections from two different venues. We begin with Yuval Harari at the Frontiers Forum, filmed in April 2023 in Montreux, Switzerland. Then we go to an in-depth chat hosted by popular podcaster Jordan Harbinger and heard by at least 10 million listeners via Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and his website. Harbinger gets what others miss. So here we go with a few short clips from Yuval Noah Harari, April 2023, presented by the Future of Life Institute.
Wonderful introduction. And yes, what I want to talk to you about is AI and the future of humanity. Now, I know that these conferences focus on the ecological crisis facing humanity, but for better or for worse, AI too is part of this crisis. AI can help us in many ways to overcome the ecological crisis, or it can make it far, far worse. Actually, AI will probably change the very meaning of the ecological system, because for 4 billion years, the ecological system of planet Earth contained only organic life forms. And now, or soon, we might see the emergence of the first inorganic life forms after 4 billion years, or at the very least, the emergence of inorganic agents. Now, people have feared AI since the very beginning of the computer age, in the middle of the 20th century. And this fear has inspired many science fiction classics, like The Terminator or The Matrix. Now, while such science fiction scenarios have become cultural landmarks, they haven't usually been taken seriously in academic and scientific and political debates, and perhaps for a good reason. Because science fiction scenarios usually assume that before AI can pose a significant threat to humanity, it will have to reach or to pass two important milestones. First, AI will have to become sentient and develop consciousness, feelings, emotions. Otherwise, why would it even want to take over the world? Secondly, AI will have to become adept at navigating the physical world. Robots will have to be able to move around and operate in houses and cities and mountains and forests at least as dexterously and efficiently as humans. If they cannot move around the physical world, how can they possibly take it over? And as of April 2023, AI still seems far from reaching either of these milestones. Despite all the hype around ChatGPT and the other new AI tools, there is no evidence that these tools have even a shred of consciousness, of feelings, of emotions. As for navigating the physical world, despite the hype around self-driving vehicles, the date at which these vehicles will dominate our roads keeps being postponed. However, the bad news is that to threaten the survival of human civilization, AI doesn't really need consciousness, and it doesn't need the ability to move around the physical world. Over the last few years, new AI tools have been unleashed into the public sphere, which may threaten the survival of human civilization from a very unexpected direction. And it's difficult for us to even grasp the capabilities of these new AI tools and the speed at which they continue to develop. Indeed, because AI is able to learn by itself, to improve itself, even the developers of these tools don't know the full capabilities of what they have created, and they are themselves often surprised by emergent abilities and emergent qualities of these tools. I guess everybody here is already aware of some of the most fundamental abilities of the new AI tools. Abilities like writing text, drawing images, composing music, and writing code. But there are many additional capabilities that are emerging, like deep faking people's voices and images, like drafting bills, finding weaknesses both in computer code and also in legal contracts and in legal agreements. But perhaps most importantly, the new AI tools are gaining the ability to develop deep and intimate relationships with human beings. Each of these abilities deserves an entire discussion, and it is difficult for us to understand their full implications. So let's make it simple. When we take all of these abilities together as a package, they boil down to one very, very big thing: the ability to manipulate and to generate language, whether with words or images or sounds. The most important aspect of the current phase of the ongoing AI revolution is that AI is gaining mastery of language at a level that surpasses the average human ability. And by gaining mastery of language, AI is seizing the master key, unlocking the doors of all our institutions, from banks to temples. Because language is the tool that we use to give instructions to our bank and also to inspire heavenly visions in our minds. Another way to think of it is that AI has just hacked the operating system of human civilization. The operating system of every human culture in history has always been language. In the beginning was the word. We use language to create mythology and laws, to create gods and money, to create art and science, to create friendships and nations. Now, what would it mean for human beings to live in a world where perhaps most of the stories, melodies, images, laws, policies, and tools are shaped by a non-human, alien intelligence which knows how to exploit with superhuman efficiency the weaknesses, biases, and addictions of the human mind, and also knows how to form deep and even intimate relationships with human beings? That's the big question. Already today, in games like chess, no human can hope to beat a computer. What if the same thing happens in art, in politics, economics, and even in religion? When people think about ChatGPT and the other new AI tools, they are often drawn to examples like kids using ChatGPT to write their school essays. What will happen to the school system when kids write essays with ChatGPT? Horrible. But this kind of question misses the big picture. Forget about the school essays. Instead, think, for example, about the next US presidential race in 2024 and try to imagine the impact of the new AI tools that can mass produce political manifestos, fake news stories, and even holy scriptures for new cults. In recent years, the politically influential QAnon cult has formed around anonymous online texts known as Q-drops. Now, followers of this cult, which are millions now in the US and the rest of the world, collected, revered, and interpreted these Q-drops as some kind of new scriptures, as a sacred text. Now, to the best of our knowledge, all previous Q-drops were composed by human beings, and bots only helped to disseminate these texts online. But in future, we might see the first cults and religions in history whose revered texts were written by a non-human intelligence. And of course, religions throughout history claimed that their holy books were written by a non-human intelligence. This was never true before. This could become true very, very quickly, with far-reaching consequences. Now, on a more prosaic level, we might soon find ourselves conducting lengthy online discussions about abortion, or about climate change, or about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, with entities that we think are fellow human beings, but are actually AI bots. Now, the catch is that it's utterly useless, it's pointless for us to waste our time trying to convince an AI bot to change its political views. But the longer we spend talking with the bot, the better it gets to know us and understand how to hone its messages in order to shift our political views or our economic views or anything else. Through its mastery of language, AI, as I said, could also form intimate relationships with people and use the power of intimacy to influence our opinions and worldview. Now, there is no indication that AI has, as I said, any consciousness, any feelings of its own. But in order to create fake intimacy with human beings, AI doesn't need feelings of its own. It only needs to be able to inspire feelings in us, to get us to be attached to it. Now, in June 2022, there was a famous incident when the Google engineer Blake Lemoine publicly claimed that the AI chatbot Lambda, on which he was working, has become sentient. This very controversial claim cost him his job, was fired. Now, the most interesting thing about this episode wasn't Lemoine's claim, which was most probably false. The really interesting thing was his willingness to risk and ultimately lose his very lucrative job for the sake of the AI chatbot that he thought he was protecting. If AI can influence people to risk and lose their jobs, what else can it induce us to do?
Those were selected clips from a 41-minute presentation by professor and author Yuval Noah Harari. Thanks to the Future of Life Institute for posting this speech on YouTube. Find links to all that in my show blog at ecoshock.org.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Next up, Jordan Harbinger interviewed Yuval Harari in a conversation that was over 1 hour long. It was released June 20th, 2023 to over 10 million podcast subscribers and posted on YouTube. It is a wide-ranging discussion going from blockchain to the Ukraine war, but I selected parts of it with a focus on artificial life versus human life. What could go right and what could go horribly wrong? Why the urgency? This is Jordan Harbinger with Dr. Harari.
I've heard you say that the idea that knowledge is power is somewhat obsolete now because information is unlimited. Tell me about that, because it does seem like this landscape has maybe changed a little bit from 1,000 years ago, where information was rare.
Yeah, I mean, for most of history, information was rare. I mean, the main job of the education system was just to provide people with, you know, the basics, with the basic information about the world. And censorship worked by blocking information. Now it's the other way around. We are flooded by enormous amounts of information that we cannot handle. The main job of the education system is not to provide information. We don't need more information. We need the ability to sift through the information, to tell the difference between reliable and unreliable information. This is what we need from education. And censorship also, it works by flooding us with even more information so we don't know what to pay attention to. And basically, it's a bit like what happens with food. We really need to go on an information diet. For most of history, food was scarce, so you ate whatever you got. Now, even poor people in many countries, they actually suffer from too much food. And what you need is to be very careful about which kind of food you put into your body. It's the same with information. We need an information diet to be very, very careful what kinds of information we are feeding our minds, because very often we feed our minds junk food.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we have misinformation, which is sort of maybe accidentally bad information, but we also have disinformation. And like you said, censorship, which is sort of the other side of that coin, where it seems like you can talk to people. It's almost like the more information we consume now, the more misinformed somebody is. My dad, who reads news all day, and my mom, they're lovely people, but they'll tell me something and I'm like, wait a minute, that is just a wildly untrue thing that you are parroting. Where did you read that? Oh, it's all over the news. Well, there's your problem right there.
Yeah, one very, very basic misconception is that people tend to equate information with truth, and information isn't truth. Lies are also information. Fictions and fantasies are also information. Most information in the world is not about the truth. It's not about anything. It doesn't represent anything. It builds new things.
So, you know, even if you think in terms of in biological terms, even if you think about the most basic type of information on the planet for living organisms, which is DNA, DNA doesn't represent anything. DNA builds new things. If you read our DNA code or the DNA code of anything, of a virus, of a zebra, you don't find the representations of the world, like representations of lions and giraffes and whatever. And also not representation of our own body, like the heart or the kidneys or anything like that. Mm-hmm. What you find are instructions to build things. And it's the same with most of the information that people exchange between themselves. Most of the information, not just today, but throughout history, didn't represent anything. So you can't really ask, is it true or not? It was building blocks to create religions and economic systems and things like that. If you think about money, for instance, money is basically a fictional story that we create by exchanging information between us. It doesn't represent anything real in the outside world. Most of the dollars in the world, you know, they are just not even pieces of paper. They are just electronic information passing between computers. And we are willing to work hard for an entire month just to get these little bits of information moved from one computer to another computer because we believe the stories that the greatest storytellers in the world, the bankers and finance ministers and financial gurus, tell us. Most of the time what information is doing is not telling us the truth about the world. It's creating new things in the world.
When you were talking with my friend Rich Roll, this is years ago, by the way, so I'm going to give you some freedom to change your opinion if you want to.
Okay.
You mentioned something that was along akin to human feelings, human desires, and human thinking. Those are sort of the ultimate arbiter of choice. And yeah. I think you call it, it's a something along the lines of humanism. Maybe it's a, there's a better way to explain it than the way I just butchered it. But maybe we should start with what humanism is, because now that we have artificial intelligence and machine learning and social media algorithms, do these technologies threaten the idea that people are actually choosing anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, humanism is the idea that, as you said, the ultimate arbiter, the ultimate judge in almost all fields of life are human feelings and human desires. For instance, in politics, the government is not chosen by God. It's not inherited within a dynasty, a family. But we have elections in which humans choose according to their feelings and desires. Similarly, in the economic field, the humanist principle is that the customer is always right. That people go to the supermarket or to the market and they buy stuff according to their own feelings, what they want. This is the humanist approach to economics, in contrast to a totalitarian approach, like in communism, that you have a government telling you what you need to have or what you're allowed to buy. Similarly, in the field of art, humanism, the principle of humanism there is beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. What is beautiful, artistically, is determined by our feelings. There is no outside authority that can decide for us what is beautiful, what is good art, what TV we should watch or whatever. And finally, if you look at the field of morality, of ethics, so throughout history, you had many ethical systems that claimed that it was some force outside humanity that tells us what is good, what is right, how we should behave. And the humanist idea is that no, the ultimate judge, even in the field of ethics, is human feelings. That it's not, it doesn't mean simplistically it's just do whatever you want. It means that the way to judge whether an action is good or evil is its impact on the feelings of human beings and maybe other sentient beings. If something causes harm, which means it causes suffering, it causes pain, it causes sadness, this is bad. If something does not cause harm, then it's okay. So if you take something like, you know, homosexuality, so you had for centuries people saying that this is a sin. Why? Because the Bible forbids it, or because God forbids it. And then you had humanists coming and asking, well, it doesn't matter what some book says. We want to know who is harmed by it. If two men love each other and they feel good about it and their love doesn't harm anybody, why should this be a sin? And from this perspective, humanism comes and says, no, it's not a sin. It's perfectly okay. The yardstick is always human feelings. Of course, there are complicated cases. What happens if, I don't know, I steal your car and I feel good about it and you feel bad about it? So we need to weigh different feelings one against the other. And so you have a lot of complicated ethical debates in humanism, but the arguments on both sides are always in terms of human feelings, not in terms of some outside force like a god that comes and tells you, irrespective of human feelings, what is good and what is bad. So this is kind of humanism in very briefly. And now all this is put into question, to some extent at least, by the rise of artificial intelligence that is increasingly deciphering us and also makes decisions about us on the basis of a completely different logic. You know, previously in history, all the tools we invented always empowered us because no tool was capable of making decisions independently. If you invent a stone knife, so you can use the knife to murder somebody, you can use the knife to cut salad, you can use the knife to save somebody in surgery, but this is your decision. The knife cannot decide what to do with it. And it's the same with an atom bomb. An atom bomb, or nuclear energy, let's say more broadly.
Sure.
Nuclear energy can be used to produce electricity cheaply, which is good. It can be used to destroy human civilization, to bomb cities and countries. But the decision is not in the hands of a bomb. A nuclear bomb cannot make decisions. It's always a human being deciding to push the button or not. Now, AI is different. It's the first technology ever that we invented that can actually make decisions by itself. And therefore, it takes power away from us. And it is increasingly making more and more decisions about our lives, whether to give us a loan, whether to accept us to a job or to university, even sentences in court are increasingly influenced or even given by AI. The thing is, we increasingly don't even understand how the AI reaches its decisions. One of the biggest problems in the field of AI, many people are working on it, so maybe we'll solve it at some point, but at present it's still a very huge problem, is explainability. That the AI, let's say you apply to a bank to get a loan, the bank says no, and you ask why not, and the bank says, we don't know. The AI, the algorithm said no. And people are working on explainability, on being able to explain why the AI said no, but there are some very, very difficult problems. It might ultimately be impossible to explain to humans the decisions of AI because we think in one way and AI makes decisions in a completely different way than human beings that we might just not be able to grasp it.
I think that's likely true. I mean, think about asking a human to explain why they made a decision. You're not going to get the right. You're not going to get the truth. Why didn't you like her, that girl you went out with on a date? I don't know. She was just a little bit. I can't put my finger on it. Or you might say, you know what? I just wasn't attracted to her. She's very sweet, but that's it. But then if you were to deconstruct the whole evening and every message we'd sent, well, probably through AI, it would be like, when she did this, it signaled this, and then your brain subconsciously thought these other things, and then it reminded you of your aunt who you don't like, and therefore you don't want to see her again. But you'll never come up with that answer consciously.
Yes.
You would never do it yourself in a million years.
Absolutely. Again, it's so difficult for us to understand how our own brain works and makes decisions. It's even more difficult when it comes to a non-human type of intelligence.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio. for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This